listener production.
Hey all, welcome to the Adam and Simon Show's Back to the Interview Day. And today's guest, we have project host, journalist, smart guy, Waleed Ali, Gold Logie winner.
Smart guy, but we don't talk to him about news. We don't talk to him about the project. We don't talk to him about any of that. We talk to him about his passions, which is actually football.
Yep.
The Tigers, loves the Tigers.
Liverpool.
Loves Liverpool.
Yep. It's actually just a very interesting chat all about, like, who Waleed actually is as a person. It's very different to, like, the Waleed that you see on screen.
Yeah.
He's, like, he's such a lovely guy.
I actually remember when we put this episode out, because Waleed is a big face, he's often quite polarizing, as all big faces are. And I remember when we put this episode out, people inboxed me and said, you've changed my mind on Waleed.
Yeah.
Which is not to endorse people who don't like Waleed. I think he's a good dude.
Yeah.
But it reveals a little bit about the man behind the man.
Yeah. Thoughtful, so, interesting. It's actually just a very, very fun chat. So we very much hope you enjoy. Here he is, Mr. Waleed Ali.
It's pretty bloody good to have you on, mate.
That's a good intro, too. Yeah,
thank you. Thanks very much. Feels like I've done it before.
Yeah, I think so. I think it would. So, Waleed, there's many strings to your bow, obviously. You TV presenter.
Oh, thank you.
Academic.
Yep.
Author.
Yep.
Sports fanatic.
Journo.
Musician.
Yep.
We want you to put them in order because we're a heavy lists-based podcast. Oh, it turns out every time we talk to anybody,
we're lists.
All we do is just want them to put it in a list. But you don't even have to put in a list. You can just say, what would your intro be?
Yeah, if you're a stand-up comedian, you know how stand-up comedians, before they come on stage, they're like, and coming on stage, it's the funniest guy in Melbourne, Adam Denston, and then I turn out to be walking out. How would you comedian introduce? Well, you don't have to comedian. How would you intro yourself?
You mean I can just make up crap?
Whatever you want. Yeah.
100%.
In that case, I'm a Nobel Prize winning physicist. let's start there.
Good.
I think I would have sports fanatic probably at number one.
Nice.
And then I think it gets difficult because there's a difference between what I do most of and then the way I see myself. So I would, for example.
We're more a see yourself podcast.
Yeah. Choose your own adventure. It's your life, mate.
So I would have academic above anything to do with media.
Mm. Good one.
Good.
Right. Yeah.
Is that because you get more chops for that in your household?
Is a hard.
Yeah. It's academia rivalry.
No. Yeah. No, no. Surely I would be better off in my household just saying, oh, academia. Oh, yeah, I do that, but that's just a side hustle for me. Oh, really? That's like your full-time focus? No, that's adorable. That would be the better way. Better way to play it, right?
That depends how much trouble you want to get yourself into.
That doesn't sound like that's happened before at all.
No, it actually hasn't. But you're planning an idea. I think I just, maybe because I did academia first.
Yeah,
and maybe because we're in television, especially. Leave aside television for the moment. Like when I'm writing in print, or when I'm doing radio stuff with that show at the ABC. They tend to be fairly academic in nature anyway. So then the outlier really is TV. And I feel like very often I'm the one in the meeting trying to figure out how to ask a question that no one else cares about, which is pretty much what academics do. So I feel like at heart that's kind of what's going on, even if that's not practically what I'm doing with my life. I still do a little bit. I still teach. Mm-hmm. And
what do you teach? What's your subjects that you teach?
So I'm in politics and specifically I'm within terrorism studies. So I teach a master's subject called Wars of Recognition, which is trying to explain global terrorism, but using political, like really grand social and political theory to do it.
That sounds so good.
The way I try to explain it is I instead of asking what causes global terrorism, I begin with a much more fundamental question, which is what causes anyone to do anything? And it turns out there's a whole lot of social theory on that. And then once you use that theory and then start applying it to the specific case study of global terrorism, then interesting things come out of that. So that's the subject that I teach. But it's master's level, so it tends to be fairly small groups of people.
Yeah.
And it's really enjoyable for that reason.
I asked Susan this question as well, and I'm going to get a follow-up from you. When you put an assignment out, how much of the assignment do you read before you give the mark? Because I've got a suspicion that you don't read any. You just kind of go, ah, oh, they're a 70. Yeah, that's an 80. Oh, they're a pretty good student. They can have a 90.
Can I just clarify? Is your when you say you have a suspicion that that's what I do? Do you mean because of me? Or
no, not you in particular. No. Simon's got a real vendetta against teachers, namely Mrs. McGree, his business studies teacher.
No, I just don't believe that a university professor. This happened to me a lot at university. Can you imagine? I'm a bit jaded by it. Would read every word. They can't possibly. You can't possibly.
In your defense, Mrs. McGree was crap. Like, she really has it coming. But
I don't endorse that. It's fine.
No, I don't even know who she is. But I do read them. And then, do you know what happened? And maybe it's different for me because like I say, it's masters, so it's a smaller number of papers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's the difference is because they're masters, they're a lot bigger. So it actually takes up a lot of time doing it. But you know, the thing that's really annoying about it is almost all of the time I read through, I get to the end and I go, yep, I could have marked this within the first paragraph.
Bummer.
That's exactly what Susan said. She reckons as soon as you read the intro, you could be like, yeah, I know where this is going.
Yeah, and you can usually tell what standard it is. So it's funny, the way I tend to mark is like I'll just start reading and as I'm reading, almost involuntarily, a number will just emerge.
Oh, bang.
In my head. 56. I should be clear. That number.
43.
How did you know?
72.
No, I should be clear that number corresponds to the quality of the essay. It's not. I'm not conjuring some random number.
12.
Turns out I've got a slot machine in my head. It just has a random number between 0 and 100.
Yeah. Anyway, so a number will emerge and it starts emerging fairly quickly and it is really amazing how rarely that number changes by the end. So it changes occasionally, like maybe once, twice a year.
Is it always really specific or do you go like 50s, so it's always 60s, like 70s? 83, bang, easy.
Yes, it's like that. It's really, really strange.
A savant. You sound like a savant.
No, I don't think either that or I'm just phoning it in. I don't know.
Because the tone of yours when you go, I actually do read them, sounds like a lot of other teachers don't read them.
No way. I just do not believe. Oh, look, I believe that you two read them. I do because you seem
and you're interviewing
just very lovely people. You were nice enough to come on the podcast. Both very successful. You've done very well for yourselves. I just don't believe that every teacher that I've had read everything. They can't possibly have.
Let me put it this way. If you're marking 300 papers, I reckon there's a fair chance you're not reading.
Yeah, there we go. That's the answer we wanted.
I mean, that's the answer I wanted exactly.
Yeah. But I will say this, but here's the writer, right, which is kind of the point I was making before. I reckon it wouldn't make any difference.
Yeah. And I mean,
so, like you actually develop a skill. It's really weird. You develop this skill for being able to assess where a piece of work sits. Really, really quickly.
Yeah.
It's a different kind of reading. I think what you're doing is you're looking for certain things.
Yep.
And you know what's there and you know what needs to be there and you know what isn't there. And so you don't miss things. You may not read every word, but you don't miss
anything. Because you're looking. You see what you're looking for. That makes sense.
You know what a good answer looks like and you know that that's not it. And you know that is it. The thing is actually that good papers are really easy to mark. Bad papers are much harder to mark.
And I apologise to all of my teachers.
Mrs. McGree? You apologise to
her? Mrs. McGree, she was a big fan of mine. Always Mrs. McGree. It's every other university paper that I ever put in and got a 72 for. Every single one of them.
I had that at uni too though, actually. I remember my early years of law. I felt like it did not matter what I did. I always got 68.
Sounds like they weren't reading your paper.
Really, really hard.
Yep.
Yeah. Except why was it that it was always my paper that got that same, like everyone else got same numbers as well, but they were often better numbers. Why did I get that number?
Yeah.
what was the deal there?
I reckon 68's the number that you don't question. You're like, it's not bad enough.
Yeah, but 72, like, same sort of thing. Yeah. It's like sits in that little bracket there. I reckon I did the same thing. So I had a thought that it was either going to, I'm like, I'm getting a 72 either way. So like, I'll just do it on the night before. Who cares? Bang, 72.
Yeah.
What's up?
Did it work?
Yeah, 72. I put in no further effort into anything else that I did then. No, that's not true. Then I tried really hard the next time, got 72, so I went back to doing it the night before.
Yeah.
You've won lots of awards, Waleed. What's your favourite award that you've won? Like, do you have one? Is there one that just like sits on the mantle?
And may I put forward a guess?
No. Okay, go on. I'd love to hear your guess.
2005 Antenna Award.
Yep.
Salam Cafe. Best program.
Wow. So you're saying I peaked 15 years ago?
No, I'm saying that could be your favourite. Doesn't have to mean it was your best.
Peak. Not a peak. Sometimes the best awards are the ones that – the best win is not always the grand final.
No, that's true. I you know what? I'll be honest, I'd kind of forgotten about that one. But now that you mention it.
We actually gave Salam Cafe a pump up when we interviewed Susan last week. So this is the second run it's getting. Yeah. Surely it's getting some YouTube hits after this.
Wow. I feel like no one's spoken about Salam Cafe quite this much for at least, well, ever.
Or enough, in our opinion.
I remember, do you know what's amazing about that antenna award, though? Is do you know who presented it to us?
I watched the video.
We did watch the YouTube.
It was there was a bald man and then a female co-host, but I couldn't tell who it was, but she seemed familiar. She was on on the project. It was.
Who is it?
She's a co-host on the project. As soon as you see her face, it was not Rachel Corbett. It was who was the pink thing for Masked Singer?
Oh, yes. Georgie Coghlan.
It was Georgie Coghlan. Yes.
Well done. Well played. Yes.
How about
it was Georgie
that?
Coghlan. And you know, I did not even know this. Georgie told me this. So one day we were at work and she reminded me that she had handed me this award. It never even occurred to me that had. So she must have been at Channel 31 at the same time. That's all I can think.
Incredible.
Because otherwise, I don't know why she would have.
Well, no, it's.
And then I got up and I took it and I remember.
They were Victorian awards.
No, it's the Antenna Awards. It's just sponsored by the Victorian government.
But as in, like, maybe Georgie was working for the.
Victorian government or something.
I don't know. We can ask her.
No, I suspect she was on 31, actually. Because I've spoken to her about that. She was in Breaking News or something. Anyway, I'm not sure. And then I don't know much else about it. I remember getting up and thanking the people of Cronulla because it was just after.
Yes. I laughed at that part. I liked that part a lot.
Susan said she couldn't take it on a plane. Susan said she couldn't take something this pointy on a plane.
That's right. Yes.
The nostalgia of this is fantastic.
Yeah, it's great.
And
That was actually really, really good fun because I think we'd won an antenna award the previous year, like for whatever category it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think this particular year we didn't win that category, but then we won the big one or something. And I don't know how that all worked.
So
you just take it and run, right?
Also on our YouTube travels of yourself, we've obviously found your robot child, but your robot child performance of Pink Floyd's Comfortably Numb at the Walkleys. Which is a great video. It's got 23,262 views. Now 22,263 views.
22,000 is a lot, by the way.
Yep. Robot Child, which is your band, correct?
Yeah.
Well, you're in the band?
Yes.
Or would you call it your band?
Yeah. No, I'd say both. It's my band, but it's all of our bands.
Okay.
Yeah.
We all write.
Yep. Okay. Like, I just thought of that one on the fly.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, it's a tricky question.
Yeah. No. No. If you ever think that any of our questions are tricky, Waleed, it's purely by accident, and we're definitely not trying to pin anything on you.
So, Robot Child's YouTube.
I've misinterpreted the question.
Robot Child's YouTube page, 247 subscribers.
That's got to get some ad payments. Just check who started your YouTube and see if they just bought a boat or something.
Yeah. At least. Okay,
sure.
But what we wanted to do, because it's a great video, fantastic viewing out there for anyone who wants to see it. But what we wanted to do, because there's 59 comments on there, but we wanted to give you a chance to, if you wanted to write a reply to any of the comments.
Oh, God. Hang on. Surely you've broken the first rule of broadcasting, which is
what's that?
Reading YouTube comments.
No, yeah, we read like, your YouTube comments, though, not ours.
Yeah, yours.
Right, actually, you got me on a technicality.
So now you're okay, not going to break them because we'll read them to you. But now you get to reply. So that's how it works. So this is
all we're doing is giving you a right of reply.
Yeah.
An opportunity to broadcast. Because
this is a version of – this is mean tweets, basically.
Well, we feel – no, some of them are quite positive. We feel like that you don't have enough platforms to respond to people if you want to.
Yeah.
So
we want to be good blokes and provide that for you.
Exactly. We're just the guys. Hey, we're just the medium. We're just like the age. You write for the age. We're just the age at the moment.
It's fine.
I get it. I get it.
James McCallum said, "As you lawyer, I strongly advise you to choose a different song next time." How do you feel about James?
Okay.
He said, "As you lawyer." He also didn't say, "As your lawyer."
Yeah, one of the things you look for in a lawyer is attention to detail. But sure,
one thing.
I would say James has a point in that Pink Floyd are very jealously guarding what they do, and it is for that reason that that performance was not broadcast. So the whole of the the whole of the Walkleys was broadcast.
Yep.
And ours was meant to be broadcast, but when we chose that song, we ended up agreeing that they would cut to an ad break, so that we didn't get sued, because we thought that maybe Roger Waters would be one of the 35 people who watched that
night. That's good journalism by you, Foss.
Yeah, and then so we got this. I'll do two more.
Sure.
One, this is from Crispy Nachos 99. Crispy Nachos 99 said, "Waleed Ali may be an F-wit, but the second solo is not too shabby. Decent chops. Crap tone, though." So he's like, hey, I don't really like him, but he's pretty good at guitar. He's not too bad. No, the time was a bit off for me, though.
That's instead of a positive sandwich, that's a negative sandwich.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's a piece of bread in the middle with some meat on the outside. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's Crispy Nachos with a K as well.
Classic Crispy Nachos. Yeah. He's always been
Crispy
like
Nachos 99. So.
I think, of course. No, 95 is different.
The first 98 were taken.
Yeah, that's right. I assume was he born in 99? Is that what that means, you reckon?
He posted it 2 years ago, so he's at least 2 years old.
Yeah, okay, excellent. So what did he say about the end? The timing's off.
Your tone. Crap tone. But your second solo was not too shabby.
Oh, well, that's very nice of him to say. Mm. I would suggest if he's a tone policeman that he makes an assessment of tone via something other than the recording device that he would have listened to it on.
Yeah.
Great call.
That's good.
It's a really good call.
And then our last one, which is probably my favorite, it's from Pete Senior. And Pete Senior just said, weak sauce.
What the hell does that mean?
Weak sauce, mate. That's weak sauce. It just really means that it's he didn't think it was strong.
Yeah.
He didn't think it was strong.
Okay. I thought you meant sauce as in like S-O-U-R-C-E.
A-U-C-E.
Fake like news.
Or tomato.
Yeah, it's like Walkley Awards, not a good spot if you're looking for Pink Floyd covers.
So
this is a bad source of Pink Floyd covers, guys. We need to find a better source of covers.
Yeah, I thought he was just watching it going, this never happened. This is just fake.
I was watching this. They went to commercial.
That's an unusual response.
Yeah. Weak sauce.
Oh, well.
You should try to use that on the project one time. If someone does something poor, just be like, weak sauce, mate.
Yeah, that's weak sauce. That's absolute weak sauce.
That's weak sauce.
Do you know what, though? Is this a popular expression?
Yeah, I mean.
Not unpopular.
Yeah.
Right. So if I were to say it on national television, I wouldn't sound like a YouTube troll pretending that I was on television. I would sound like a normal person.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, definitely. I've definitely heard someone say that's weak sauce.
Someone said it to us that we were weak sauce.
We're just in this with you together. We're all weak sauce together.
That's genuinely someone put in a
Someone reviewed our podcast and called us weak sauce, I think.
Yeah, they said you guys are weak sauce.
So, you know, I don't like weak sauce as an expression because sometimes a dish calls for weak sauce.
Mm. You don't always need a heavy gravy, do you?
Sometimes a strong sauce is the worst thing you could possibly be after.
There you go. Take it as a compliment.
It strikes me as a stupid way of insulting someone.
Maybe if the saying was watery sauce, if it was like, watery sauce, you'd be like, I guess even sometimes watery sauce.
Not even, no.
I would just recommend steering clear of all sauce-based metaphors in this regard because I don't think you can apply universal judgments to sauces in this way.
Mm. You think weak performance would have been more acceptable?
Well, that would be clearer, yes.
YouTube tends not to go for clarity.
No.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Fair enough. Sorry. You're right. I got far too involved in the linguistic mechanics of the particular insult rather than the spirit in which it was intended.
See, and this is why it says don't read your comments because you get bogged down on this stuff. Well,
turns out you spend 5 minutes talking about weak sauce.
Yeah, that's right.
So, Waleed, you are a sports tragic. And then you're wearing a Richmond jumper right now.
Yeah, that's right.
Were you watching Richmond highlights in your Richmond jumper?
Yes.
No. What's better for the story?
If you watch a Richmond game at home, do you watch it with with any gear on?
Are we talking about a live game or a replay?
Live game. Or both. I mean, does it matter?
Yeah, it does matter.
Does it matter to him? By asking the question, I'll throw you off the scent. Figured.
Oh, look, let's just cut to the chase. Well, he's a Richmond tragic. Let's just go to it.
Yeah, no, I'm a big sporting dresser. So I'm also a really big Liverpool fan. So if I'm watching Liverpool, then I have to put on a Liverpool top and probably a scarf.
Multiple.
And it doesn't matter whether there are people coming over or not. Like I've got to do that. And in fact, I have different tops. So for example, I've got a shirt from last season when Liverpool won the Champions League and it's got the Champions League patches on it. Yep. So if we're playing in a Champions League game, I'll wear that. If they're playing in the Premier League, then I'll wear a different shirt.
Do you have a number on the back with Ali at the top?
I would explain it. No, actually I do. I did. When I was in the UK in the 90s, I was on a cricket tour and I got a Liverpool top and I got Ali on it in the Premier League lettering and it was like the coolest. That was like before you could do stuff like that from the other side of the world. So it was the coolest thing that anyone had ever bought. It was amazing. But when I went to Anfield, 2018 for the first time.
Anfield's the home of Liverpool. Shirt there. For everyone at home.
Yes, it is the home of the. It's the home of sport. Anyway, so what I did was I bought the shirt and I noticed I wasn't going to get anything on the back because I think as you get older, you support the team, not a player.
Yeah, right?
Yep.
So you tend not to.
And it's English Premier League
about getting.
So unless it's Gerrard, they're leaving. So
yeah. Gerrard's a bit different, yeah. Yep. Anyway, but they've got a player for Liverpool at the moment who's an Egyptian guy called Mohamed Salah. And I noticed in the shop that they had shirts with his number on it with Salah written on it in Arabic. And I just couldn't believe that they were selling this.
Yeah.
And so I bought that. And then I was lucky enough in June last year, I was in Madrid for the Champions League final. Right. Oh. Unbelievable. I don't know. It was incredible. I got a ticket. It's one of the greatest days of my life. That includes things like having kids, all that stuff.
Where does it sit versus 2017's Richmond grand final win?
Oh, don't ask me that. That's
a great question, Adam.
It's too hard. That is too. I mean, I have like That's much harder than asking about a favorite kid because that everyone has one of those. But these
my favorite kid
are very difficult to everyone does. But this is very difficult to sort of tease apart.
The emotion at the siren of both. So the final whistle of the Liverpool game versus the siren of the Richmond 2017. Did the emotions differ? And if so, how?
Yeah, 2017 was disbelief.
Right.
So I think even though Liverpool and Richmond are basically the same thing, and I could go on about that at length if you like. All right, getting the sense you wouldn't, but I could.
Look, I'd love to, but our demographic doesn't really speak to the Liverpool. Look, we've already hit our quota of sport chat, to be quite fair, but for us, this is great. We'll cut this for a separate podcast. This is going to be awesome.
Yeah, sure. All right, great. Yeah. You've got a global audience if you want it, mate. Yeah. It's a very big global brand, Liverpool. You just need to I think they're basically the same thing, right? That is traditional powerhouses that have been really crap for about three decades. But in the case of Richmond, they were so crap for so long.
Oh, yeah. Horrendous.
I think we forget that until 2017, there was that famous stat that before they'd won that, Before that final series, Fitzroy had won more finals than Richmond.
Yeah, they weren't even around.
The 80s.
They haven't been around since 96.
From 1983, right? Yeah. So we were literally being outdone by a club that no longer existed, right? So that's how bad we were. So the idea of winning a premiership was ridiculous. And so the level of disbelief and just the ecstatic feeling was probably beyond anything I've ever experienced as a sports fan, includes the final because Liverpool had been ordinary, but they'd won the Champions League in 2005. They'd sort of always – it's such an unequal league that when
it was going to happen sooner or later.
On the table, right? So I'd probably say that. Yeah, exactly. Or something, there's some level of success surrounds the club. But the thing is, the reason I was mentioning that this shirt, right, with Salah on the back in Arabic, and this Egyptian guy was also in Madrid and he stopped me and demanded a selfie. He had no idea who I was. All he knew was that I was obviously an Egyptian guy and he was an Egyptian guy and there was this other Egyptian guy who played for Liverpool and that was enough.
That's the best.
So we were clearly united. It's the most anonymous selfie I've ever had, but it was the strongest bond I've ever had with someone who asked me for a selfie.
How'd you get a ticket to the Champions League final? Just put in a call?
I have Donald Trump to thank. No, I didn't just put in a call. actually, it happened through Richmond, weirdly, because Liverpool made the final, and I don't know if you follow this or remember any of this, but they did it by beating Barcelona in the most ridiculous way possible. It was unbelievable. So we made the final, and I just thought, oh, I think I've got to go. I've got to figure out a way to go. And I mentioned it mentioned this in passing to Peggy O'Neill, who's the president of Richmond. And I've been friends with her for a long time, but before she was on the board, because she was a lawyer and I was a lawyer and we're both Richmond supporters. And I think I wrote something in the paper once. She got in touch with me. And so we've been friends ever since. So it's not like I just became friends with her when she became the president, guys, all right?
Only when she had a Champions League ticket.
I went for Richmond. She's the president. Richmond's good now. I thought we'd be friends. It's fine.
Yeah, that's right. But I just mentioned it in passing. And then she happened about May last year to be talking to another Richmond board member who had been given tickets to go. He was part of like a group of 10 businessmen that were going to go. And one of them had a wife who is, or has a wife, I presume, still.
Keep digging. Yep.
Who's Asian American, right? And she didn't want to leave America because she was worried that under the Trump administration, she would be given a hard time getting back into America.
Oh, right.
So she wasn't going to use her ticket. So her ticket became free. And because I'd mentioned it to Peggy and Peggy had mentioned it to this guy on the board, suddenly I had a ticket.
You're going to Madrid.
In my hand, and I was off to Madrid. And I went to Madrid and back in about 4 days and watched the game. And it was unbelievable.
And that's
unbelievable.
Sports. That's sports. That's what I always find it really interesting when people say, I don't like sports. Like that, I think that's the people that love sports, that's what they love about them. Is that they can make you feel things that you just have never felt before or don't feel about other things. Like it's just this raw, like it's a part of you.
I also can't stop it. Like when I, because I'm obviously a Brisbane Lions fan, but when I watch the Lions, like I sometimes don't want to have the visceral reaction that I do have, but I feel like it genuinely bubbles up inside of me and I'm like, oh, well, here it comes.
I can't help it.
Do you find that even when you're watching a replay, so when you know the result, or do you find watching a replay is different?
Yeah, definitely different. So if I know the result, I'm always in my head working out how they get to that point, like how many goals behind they are and like the maths of it. It's like, all right, they're 14 points behind. That means they're going to kick two goals too and then they'll be level.
Yeah. So have you ever found, because I watch a lot of replays and I'm doing that a lot right now.
Because there's no sports.
When you know the result and you go back and watch the game and you're far less emotional, don't you see it completely differently?
Yeah.
Like, don't you see certain passages of play and you go, oh, that guy, I thought that guy had a crap game. Actually, he had a really good game. It's just he did one or two things at crucial stages that got me really upset and I got really emotional about it. And so you realize that if all you do is watch your team play, you don't know anything about sport because you're completely senseless the whole time.
Yeah.
Oh, it's why everyone thinks that their team is the best. It's just blind fanaticism.
Or the worst.
Or the worst.
One or the other.
Oh, yeah.
Or both. It's often both.
Yeah.
At the same time.
My mum couldn't go to the football for about 5 years because every time she went, she describes it this way, she turned into someone she didn't like. So she just stopped going because for that exact reason, she would get that visceral response and just would steam up. And she's like, no, I can't do it. I don't like being that person, so I'm going to not go. Now she's mellowed out a little bit, but it's definitely the Hulk's still in there. You can tell. Oh. You can tell.
Yeah. Do you know, I think a lot of us have that experience, but do you know the dirty little secret is that, you know what makes a really great atmosphere? And I've seen some amazing atmospheres. Obviously, as a Richmond fan and having been to a few Liverpool games as well, like they're famous for atmospheres. Do you know the thing that makes the atmosphere is the presence of dickheads?
Yeah.
Because if everybody sat there and was quite a passive, like, oh, polite, oh, very well done, sir. Bravo.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. What you get then is Geelong.
Yeah.
And if you've ever, have you ever watched a game at Cadinia Park?
I have. I went and saw a Brisbane Lions versus Geelong game there, and it was one of the most oppressive fan bases I've ever sat in front of because not many Brisbane fans happen to travel to Geelong for a Saturday night game. Yeah. And so it turns out that they abuse you when you're up, they're up by 100 points and it's raining. You still get abused even though you haven't said anything at all for the whole game.
Right. Well, I would say that you're one of the lucky ones to have experienced some passion from a Geelong crowd because I
know someone who's going to be experiencing some passion when the Tigers play the Cats next time.
Possibly. But, you know, I look forward to beating them in the finals again. That's when we win premiership.
Hey-oh. Oh, God. Did someone call fire in the hole?
Did you, Waleed, do you, now that you're a Richmond supporter of the 2020s and Richmond are good,
yeah.
Is there any thought back to the Richmond supporter of the late 90s when Richmond were terrible? Or is it just double down on, like, this is what you just got to get your wax in because, you know, Richmond won't be good forever. So just.
Now, while he's lost his identity, he used to be a fan of a loser.
Yeah.
Now he's a fan of a winner.
And doesn't know what to do with himself.
Yeah.
No, that's exactly right. And I imagine as a Brisbane Lions fan, did you encounter a similar thing? Like, were you originally a Fitzroy fan?
Yes, Fitzroy fans went to the last game against Richmond at the G, sat in front of David Parker.
151 points, wasn't it?
Yeah, people crying everywhere. I was six. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so when Brisbane won those three flags in a row,
it was normal.
The world sort of stopped making sense.
Yeah, I became like Joel Selwood. It was like, oh, this is just what happens. Like, we just win.
Yeah, because, and it's an age thing too, because you would have been how old at?
I was 11, 12, and 13.
Yeah. So you kind of.
And then we made the grand final in 2004. So I was 14. I was like, oh, how easy is this?
Yeah. Like winning flags is no drama. I was a North Melbourne supporter through the 90s, so I just thought prelims was what you did. You just like, yeah, I'll just go to the finals every year and like we'll camp outside and we'll go for grand finals. And we haven't done much since then, unfortunately.
No.
Which is...
Yeah. You got to remember, like my first... Richmond's last grand final until recently was 1982, right?
Yeah.
It was against Carlton and there was the streaker and all that stuff. So I have no memory of that game. My first football memory is 1983.
Oh, no.
So basically, I timed it about as badly as you could possibly time it. So my entire life was seeing Richmond towards the bottom of the ladder. That was it. And Richmond just winning wooden spoons and drafting Richard Tambling instead of Lance Franklin. And that was my whole world. So once we started being good, and even when we were like, we were good, people forget we were good from about 2013. Like we made three final series in a row. They think we sort of came from nowhere, but actually we won three final series. We made three final series in a row and then we lost elimination finals and we just went out in straight sets. People didn't understand that. Like, even when we were having a little bit of success, we were tragic. That was the thing about it. Yeah. So we'd have a great season and then we'd finish fifth and then we'd get into elimination final and we'd play Carlton, who actually finished ninth but somehow made the top eight.
Brilliant. Yep.
And then they would beat us when we were five or six goals up. Like, that was the thing, right? And that, and hence that term Richmondy and all that sort of stuff. So to see us win a final and then a couple of weeks later win the final, like it's parallel universe stuff. It's like suddenly I have to go back and question the basics of arithmetic or something, because the whole world operates by a different set of rules now to what it did a few weeks ago. And so that was really strange. And now that they've won a lot of games, I find it like – I actually, notwithstanding what I did before about Geelong, which is very I can't do that really, because 3 decades takes a lot of time to wear off. Like, I'll never really be a Hawthorn supporter I can just do that. You know, I can just have that swagger because I just expect that things will be okay. I don't. I still expect that, like, oh God, I hope we make the finals this year. That's still the way I think about it.
Yeah, that's North Melbourne supporter too. I think that's probably Brisbane supporter as well. Hawthorn supporters drive me mental because they say things like, "Ah, we've won enough flags. Like, we don't need to win this one. It's okay." And you're like, "Are you kidding me?
Yeah,
are you kidding me?" But that brings me to Liverpool as well. So Liverpool Richmond is the same. Is their championship run this year the most Liverpool thing that's ever happened?
Oh, it is actually. It really, really is.
Do you want to put some context, or do you want me to do it?
It looks like it's almost too hurtful for you to do it.
It is. It does. It hurt. It hurts a lot, actually.
So
it really.
So for everyone
how about
else,
you do it, and I'll add tragic details.
So as Waleed said before, Liverpool haven't won the top division, like the Premier League, English Premier League. They haven't won the title in 30 years. Is it 30 years, Waleed?
This will be 30 years.
Yeah, 30 years this year. And they are, for all intents and purposes, much like Richmond in that they sometimes get close, sometimes never go near it. The most recent close run they had, their champion player who had played for the club since he was a teenager, he'd been there the whole time, he slipped over in a crucial moment and someone went down and scored a goal and then they ended up losing. Then Waleed's thrown the mic. No, he hasn't really. And then
this is just a cruel level of detail. I mean, we didn't need to go into quite that amount.
This is why you couldn't do it.
I didn't really know English Premier League until I was doing placement with a Liverpool fan in that year. So every week I would go into placement and I'd be like, Carl, how'd Liverpool go? And then one week he came, he was devastated and he showed me. But now they've come through this year and they are so far on top of the table.
They lost one game.
They lost one game for the entire year. They need to win a total of how many? 3 games left.
3 of 11 or something?
No, two. They need, this is assuming everybody else wins all of their games that matters.
Yep.
They need 6 points from 9 games.
Which is
6 points from 27.
Which is as close to guaranteed as you can probably get.
Put it on me. Can I give you some context? Actually, I should probably look at the table to confirm this stuff because it's been a little while since I did it. But Liverpool's lead at the top is currently 25 points.
How many points do you get for a win?
In the history of – you get three.
There you go. One for a draw.
They're eight games clear.
Yeah.
Yeah, one draw. Eight games clear, right? Never in the history of the Premier League has anyone led by 25 points at any stage of any season. So they have a record for the margin that they have between them and the second place team.
So it's from an unbiased point of view, do you think they deserve the title now? If there happens to be no more games for the rest of the season, do you think they should give them the cup?
Well, there's no question. Like, anyone who's not an idiot agrees with that. Like, there's just no...
No one thought Leicester would win the title, though.
Interesting.
No, that's right. That's right. But, like, they are closer to winning the title than anyone has ever been without actually having won it. Right? Like, that's put it this way. Their points tally, I'm just doing the maths now, their points tally is bigger than Tottenham's and Arsenal's combined right now. Yeah. So you it's unbelievable. For a large chunk of the season, they had more points than Man U and Chelsea combined. Like, it's insane what they're doing. They have the highest points tally at this stage of the season of anyone who's ever played in any of Europe's top five leagues. Like, they're breaking every record there is.
But so, competition stopped, then, though. Can you really give a title to an unfinished season? Well, is that possible?
Yeah, there was a bloody pandemic, wasn't there? Yeah, right. Okay, so this is... look... There are going to be a lot of victims, but Liverpool shouldn't be one of them.
We've taken you from a real high of talking about Richmond's win to a real low about Liverpool's lack of win.
I know.
Yeah. And now our usual couple of questions that we always try and finish with is which suburb did you grow up in Melbourne?
I grew up in Vermont.
Right. Who are the other famous people from Vermont?
I don't know. So Vermont, the Vermont Eagles were champion football club. So I don't know if you guys remember this, but they were like breaking records for all of the most consecutive wins in a row, whatever. They got the 50-something wins.
Did you play for the Vermont Eagles?
And yeah, I played as a junior I did, yeah.
Right.
And this was back in the days of zoning. So we were in the Essendon zone.
Yep.
And I remember it was a really big deal when a guy who was known as Daisy Williams made it to play for Essendon.
Whoa.
And so I think he would probably be the most famous person from Vermont, I think.
Daisy Williams.
But there were also, I went to school with a couple of, Google Daisy Williams, you'll see, I guarantee if you Google image Daisy Williams, you'll probably see a picture of a footy card from the 80s.
Yeah. I see a picture of him. His name was Darren Williams?
The fourth picture is a picture of a footy card.
Yeah. No, that's Gary Fools. There's a picture of Darren Williams being interviewed by someone, a screenshot.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Daisy Williams. But also I went to school with Darren and Jason Smith, who were twins. They were a couple of years above me, and they ended up at the Olympics because they were really good basketballers and they played for the Boomers at one point.
Right. Does that family all have generic Anglo-Australian names? Darren Smith? Jason Smith?
Dad Wayne?
Wayne Smith?
Yeah, it was at least in suburbs of Melbourne in the 80s. Everyone heard it. Like,
Darren, that's brilliant.
What about?
I mean, like, I gave you Darren Williams before. Like, it's hardly exotic. Yeah.
Two of the kids were called Darren. Imagine primary school back then. Darren, there's 15 kids go, huh? What?
I've actually got a mate, Waleed, called Darren. And Darren is a brilliant name. It's just a great name. But then my other friend called my friend Darren one day Daryl, just accidentally, just like slip of the tongue, called him Daryl. The only name better than Darren is Daryl. So now his nickname is Daryl.
Yes. Daryl. I think Daryl is the Darren of a previous generation.
It has to be, doesn't it?
it's a generational thing.
Of the Daryl Kerrigan generation.
Yeah.
Like if you're that age.
Yes.
Daryl is, your Darren. What's the equivalent of a Darren now?
Jet.
Something like that. I'm not sure. Oh,
all right. You're going in that way. I was going to say something like Jack.
Nah, yeah, everyone's named Jack.
Yeah, like Jack and William and stuff. Then like Nicholas and they're all two.
Thomas?
Yeah.
William,
James,
Willie. Anyway, we could do that for So
this is what I find interesting though about like white culture is that everyone's always looking for new names.
Yeah.
Like in Egypt, it's not like that. There are three names. There's Muhammad, there's Ahmed, and there's Mahmoud, and that's it. You just choose whichever one of the three you want, and that's the end of the story. Occasionally, you get something really outlandish, like a Waleed, but that's. You know, that's just a passing phase and everybody understands that. And then you get back to the classics.
Are you a hipster in Egypt? Is that what you're telling us? You've got a really hipster name.
You're the Jet.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes. Yeah. You're Taylor, spelt T-A-Y-L-A-Y. Taylor.
Yeah. Taylor. What about T-A-Y-L-U-H? That's what I'm looking for.
Oh, nice.
Looking for that. That's going to be great.
When was the last time you went back to Egypt?
I think Waleed's actually popular.
No, keep going. Keep going with your story. No.
I was just going to say, I think Waleed's actually a popular name during wartime.
Oh.
Because it was the name of quite a famous warrior. And so I think it sort of pops up. So I don't think I was born particularly during wartime, although it's the Middle East. There's always a conflict somewhere. Yeah.
Your mum and dad were having a fight.
Yeah. Maybe that's what it was about. And I was very nearly named Yasser, as in Yasser Arafat.
Right.
Wow.
And then I was born and my mum, I think it was mostly my mum, looked at me and just said, he's not a Yasser, that's Waleed. And so that was it.
See,
that's like my mate Mark. He's a twin, and the first one came out, and they were like, "Ah, that's Josh," and then the second one came out, and they were like, "Oh no, actually, that one's Josh." And so the first one was known as the other one in quotation marks for 2 weeks until the nurse came in and was like, "All right, lady, you really need to name your baby now." And so she went through the paper and was like, "Oh yeah, I like that one. Maybe we'll just call him Mark." So he was the other one because he didn't look like a Josh.
The only thing that could have made that story better was if his name ended up being Darren. Yeah.
And the next time we tell that story, it will be.
Oh, yes. We live and we learn. We live and we learn.
But hang on. This is nuts. So he had first dibs on Josh. Like he looked like a Josh, right?
No, it didn't look like a Josh. That was the problem. He didn't look like a Josh.
Josh was the number one name they wanted, though.
It was like...
No, but hang on. But if Josh never came out, he'd have been Josh. He must have looked enough like a Josh. He must have been a passable Josh.
Yeah, must have been. But he came out and they were like, Josh? Second one, that's Josh.
And so did this happen like throughout the rest of their lives? Like when they turned 8 and they bought them like, they bought Mark a He-Man figurine. Did they give it to Mark and then say, you know what, actually I think we should give that to Josh.
Josh will like this more.
He actually really looks like a Mark now. Simon will attest to it.
Yeah, like he couldn't be called a Josh.
No, he's not a Josh looking guy. No. But Josh, by gee, I'll tell you what, his parents, they would bang on because he looks like a Josh.
His brother is a Josh.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So what physical features does Mark have that are un-Josh-like?
So Josh...
I think it's the hairy chest.
Yeah, so Mark is... Well, so they're twins, but one has red hair and one has like dark black hair.
Okay, stop. I have to guess which one's which.
Correct.
So what
do you want us to describe? Hair? We can describe like their jobs and stuff too.
Yes, let's do that.
So Mark and Josh.
Oh, and I'll see who Josh is. All right.
So Mark and Josh are both about 5'8", like height and body shape, almost identical.
Yep.
So no real discerning factor between the two of them. Hair color.
Sure.
One of them has red and quite long at the moment, and the other one has brown.
With a big beard.
With a big beard currently, but both able to grow quite solid facial hair. But one grows red, and we're talking like that fire engine red, like real.
Like not Adam red, like red.
Yeah, like getting bullied at school because they call you Fanta Pants and that kind of stuff.
Right. Yeah. Like a Scottish Highlander type
situation. Yeah. Yep. Well, family's origin is Welsh.
Right. Okay. Yep. So I think you're fine. They're Scottish Highlanders, but okay, go on. Yep. That's fine.
One of them is a former investment banker.
Oh.
The other one runs a bar and is a bit of a music producer.
Okay. Is that the redhead or the brown hair?
So the redhead runs the bar and the brown hair was the investment banker who's now moved to Africa he was helping businesses get off the ground with his knowledge and now he's helping with a safari startup.
Okay, right. I was going to say that the redhead's definitely the one who's running the bar, right?
Yeah, redhead's running the bar, correct.
Are there any redheaded investment bankers?
Like not any that don't have dyed jet black hair, I wouldn't have thought. No chance.
Right. Even in Scotland.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They're all jet black, all look greasy.
Yes. Are there any other
one was a school captain. The other one was not the school captain. Brown hair investment banker was the school captain.
Of course.
Was a bit more sporty, so played a bit more basketball. And then redhead bartender, long hair music producer was a bit more arty.
Jeez.
So who do you think was Mark?
So here's the problem. I started out, I had a very clear idea and then every time you added a detail, I completely changed my assessment, which tells me this whole experiment's a bunch of crap, really.
This sounds like, I'm surprised you haven't tried to pull, but it's like reading an assignment. You just have a number that comes to you straight away and then you know who it is.
Yeah, but my opinion changes on this in a way that it never has whenever I read one of Simon's crap essays. I think
72 is not bad.
It's better than 68. Popped into my
head. I got an email from some, I don't know, business teacher who just said, I'll save you the trouble. This is the number. I'm going to go with Josh runs the bar and has the red hair.
Bang on.
Well done.
Bang on.
Well done.
Is that right?
That is correct. So he looks like the Josh.
He does look like a Josh.
Yep.
Wow.
Mm. Yeah. Looks like the Josh.
We'll put pictures up.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Looking at home. We'll put pictures up.
So what are we saying? That Joshes can't make money?
I think that they're just probably a bit more creative.
Mm.
I will remind you that our treasurer is a
Josh.
Well, aren't we in
he's not making any of the money. Spending the money.
We're in a deficit, aren't we?
Yeah.
So I think that almost like fully, much like Josh who runs the bar, probably in a deficit.
Maybe we should have a treasurer named Mark. That's what I'm hearing.
Right, I get it. Okay. So where some people see a pandemic and think that is the proximate cause of our financial problems.
Yes.
Yep. You blame nominative determinism.
I didn't blame him. The problem is you brought up the Joshes don't make any money.
Yeah.
We just put him as a treasurer. Okay.
That was your prejudice, not ours. Don't put that on us.
Yeah. Fair enough.
And then
somehow by repeating your explanation back to you, it became my problem. I don't know
exactly. Hey, I mean, this really does sound like his problem now.
The headline isn't going to be Adam and Simon think. It's going to be Waleed thinks, let me tell you.
Yeah, right.
Our final question, though.
Are you forwarding this to me? Don't you know? Yes.
Our final question is, who's the most famous person in your phone? And fame is as determined by you, not by us, or by society, by you. Like, who is your most valuable? Could be not
famous, just gratuitous fame.
This is complicated because it depends on what theatre of fame you are interested in. So are we talking national?
What's your choice, my friend?
International.
Your choice.
What examples have we had so far? Susan said Julie Bishop. I say Adam Gilchrist.
I say Georgia Love. Georgia Love says Osher Gunsberg.
Yep. Narrowly Meadows said, Jack. Who'd Narrowly Meadows say?
I can't remember.
Brian Lara.
Yeah, she said Brian Lara.
Brian Lara.
That was a good one.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's a really good one.
Good.
Yeah.
I do have Adam Gilchrist's number actually, but I hadn't thought of that. But see, he would be a real candidate, right? Because you've got all of India.
Subcontinent. Yep. If you're going pure volume, Adam Gilchrist is a very good one.
So who would be more famous, do you think? Adam Gilchrist or Freddie Flintoff?
Freddie. There's more people in England.
Yeah, probably Freddie.
And he's been on all those.
Adam Gilchrist probably bigger in India, right?
Oh, then I suppose Freddie probably didn't do any IPL, did he? No.
No, and Freddie's career was basically he was okay and then he played Australia and he became Superman and then he was okay again.
But Freddie's a bit more, since he's left, he's done I'm a Celebrity and Ninja Warrior, and so he's sort of broadened his fame, I guess you would say, whereas Adam has kept his celebrity within cricket.
That's a really good point.
I also have Adam Gilchrist's number, I think. Please don't tell me what it is because I'm pretty sure that he hasn't saved it. So I don't think he has mine. I think I have his, but I don't think he has mine.
Hey, let's do this. Why don't you give me the last two digits?
Oh, this is funny.
Mate, this is high risk for me because I might have to change my name.
Oh, I'm so excited.
I'm going to have to change mine to Susan Carland. Yeah. Last two numbers, 2-9. Is it 2-9?
Yep.
Yes.
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 Are the first one's 04? There you go. Only got to guess another seven numbers.
Who's in yours? So Freddie.
No, you're right. Yeah, 2-9 it is. I've got Freddie Flintoff. I've got Scott Morrison.
Yeah, I think that wins.
Scott Morrison probably counts, but no, I think Adam Gilchrist would be more famous than Scott Morrison.
Yeah.
Worldwide, definitely.
Worldwide,
I think 100%. I think the real question is, I've got Julie Bishop as well, but I didn't nominate her, but the real question is Julie Bishop more famous than Scott Morrison?
100%. Yeah. I would say so, for sure. Julie Bishop does...
There was definitely a period where people didn't know who the Prime Minister was.
For sure.
Yeah.
And Julie Bishop
maybe
has been attending lots of...
Out.
Yeah, I think so. He's been on the TV a lot lately, so it's...
he has, yeah.
Yeah. But I think Julie Bishop went to lots of the... you know, she was going to the races and she goes to the tennis and she does a lot of... She's in more the socials now
as
well.
She's a personality.
Well, hang on. If we were playing that game, I should have just said Carrie Bickmore and be done with it.
I think Carrie Bickmore would probably be more famous than Julie Bishop. What do you think?
Yeah.
Yep. Or Lisa Wilkinson.
Yeah,
but surely you can't include... Colleagues shouldn't count, right?
Well, if you're lucky enough to have colleagues that are famous, that counts.
I'm not. That's why I haven't included Simon Lovett in mine.
Yeah, my most famous person is Adam from Gogglebox. So.
Yeah, I think the problem with that is it makes the game no fun, right? Because that's the nuclear bomb.
Correct.
It just ends it.
So it's like narrowly went with narrowly went with the number who she thought would call her back.
Mm.
So she was like the person who would reply to a text or to call her back. So like while you might have Scott Morrison, he might not be like, oh, while he's calling, I better answer the phone right now.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if you did that or not. He has sent me a text.
We normally ask, hey, can we do it?
And then just call him then, Wally. Go on, prove it. Prove it.
He's at a quiet time right now.
He's definitely not busy.
I do. I'm probably not. Yeah, I'm not at the top of his list. I think I'm going to go with Freddie Flintoff.
Okay.
Nice.
I think that's my answer.
Yeah.
I think that's a good answer.
Yeah. And then our final thing is because we're a no free ads podcast, but each guest gets to have one free ad.
Mm.
So you get to plug anything, but you only get one plug. So you can plug a TV show that you might happen to be on. You can plug a book that you're writing. Yes. You can do whatever you like, but you only get one of them.
Have you just come up with that? Like just you pluck those two things just out of the air that you just happen to?
Think. Bang, out of the air. That's how good interviewers work. They just pluck things out of the air. Yeah. They just see things. There's like these all these words and numbers flying by. It's like when you pluck a number out of the air when you're marking an essay.
Yeah.
It's like bang, 84. I was just like, oh, bang.
Look, Waleed, one day when you get good at interviewing people, you'll get it.
Yeah. Let us know.
It'll come to you.
No, I just think this is a kind of instinct you can't teach.
Yeah.
There's just something about it.
Yep.
What will I plug? I'm gonna plug the book is what I'll do. I'm currently working on a book.
What's the book's title?
It's unusual. Well, it doesn't have a title yet, actually. I've got a title in mind, but I don't know.
Tell us what it's about. We'll get a title for you.
You guys might actually be interested in it because you're footy fans. I've never done anything like this before, so it's very interesting for me to be trying to pull it together. But I am writing Bashir Hooley's autobiography.
Really? That's cool. Can you tell everyone who Bashir Hooley is? I'll let you.
So Bashir Hooley is a Richmond player, two-time premiership player. I can now say.
Two-time should have won the Norm Smith, I reckon.
I agree. I had money on him to win the Norm Smith in 2017. I feel like
If he had a kick that goal in 2017, he would have won it, but he missed.
In the last quarter?
Yeah.
At the Ponsford end? Yeah, maybe. He came second in both Norm Smith.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So he's been playing for Richmond since 2010, and he started at Essendon. He was drafted 2007. And he's a sort of socially and historically significant figure because he's the first practicing Muslim to make it to the AFL. And he has a whole lot of experiences that probably no other players had for that reason.
Mm.
So he approached me a little while ago to write the autobiography for him. And I couldn't really say no.
Because he plays for Richmond or because he's a Muslim?
No, because he sort of said to me, you're the only person who can do this. I said, well.
Okay. No
have you got a, have you got a title for Waleed Todd? The first thought that came to my head was Bash and Crash. That was the first thought that came to my head.
No. No, come on, guys. The answer
It's always a footy pun.
The answer, because I'm assuming it is Bashir Hooley's life in AFL and the Australian culture, right?
Is it Hooley Dooley?
It's Hooley Dooley. You've got to call it Hooley Dooley.
You are the second and third people to suggest that.
100% that is not an original idea.
Has anyone suggested Bash and Crash?
No one has suggested that.
You can have that for free.
Although I suspect if I spoke to whoever it is at Channel 7 that puts together those football compilations of things that they show at like 11:30 on odd nights when they don't have anything else to show, that's definitely what they would have come up with.
It would be 100%.
Right next to Biff Bumps and Brawlers or whatever it was. doing. Remember that?
Can you just – no, you're definitely going to call it Bashir Hooley and then you'll have some sort of subtitle under there, My Story, Bashir Hooley from the West. He was from the West. Bashir Hooley,
I don't
know.
He was from the West, yeah. Played for the Western Jets.
So when should we expect to see this on shelves?
I think we're aiming for Christmas. What I don't know if the fact that there may not be any footy this year changes that.
Right.
But maybe it'll come out in time for the grand final. Who knows?
Yeah, Boxing Day grand final.
Both Christmas Day and the grand final.
Yeah.
That would be so sick.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be incredible? Do you know what would be great about that is that Bash is the only guy who'd be happy to turn up and play.
Yeah.
He's I'm free. No worries. Do you think Bash
– are there any Jewish players in the AFL? I don't know if there are.
I'm not sure.
That's like your mates to play golf. Oh,
yeah.
Goldberg, what's his face? The North Melbourne ruckman.
Oh,
his
name Todd Goldstein.
Do you think Bashir will be happy this year? I mean, happy. Look, happy is a very loose term, and it's not the best word that I've come up with for this. But now that there's no football on during Ramadan, he'll finally be like, "Oh, okay, great. I can just rest during Ramadan and just take it off a little bit."
Yeah, I actually think he will probably enjoy that.
Yeah,
I don't know if he would want to admit it. Or not.
You're writing his autobiography. I feel like you speak for him now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. But yeah, there are times I'm writing it and I'm going, I wonder what I can make him think here. The problem is he's going to read it at some point and then he'll probably have to approve it.
True.
No, I think you know what's interesting? So what I've decided to do is I'm not writing it chronologically. So it's not going to be one of those books that's, you know, I was born in 1988 and, grew up in Newport and blah, blah, blah. I've decided to try to write it in a thematic way.
Good.
So there'll be a chapter on, I don't know, I do know because I'm writing it. There'll be a chapter on like I want to make that clear. I have started.
Is that just for Bashir, who's obviously a big fan of our show?
Yeah,
Bashir,
come to fan. My head. It's just, he won't shut up about it. So, for example, there might be a chapter on failure or a chapter on success, or there might be a chapter on representation, you know, having to become you know, publicly known as a Muslim or whatever. And there is definitely a chapter I've done on Ramadan because it's the number one thing he's asked. Like he's always asked about how do you play footy in Ramadan. It's kind of interesting how it does it. But one of the things that is interesting about it that you don't realize until you think about it, particularly if you know the way that Ramadan works, like the rules around it, is it actually really boils down to only one game a year where it's an issue because so many games, especially for Richmond, are played at night. Or played interstate, and if you're traveling, you don't have to fast. So, so many games fall into that category.
Right.
That actually, there's really like there's in Ramadan. Really, there's like one day game in Melbourne.
Does he should just get in the ear of the person who does the fixtures and just says, mate, I've done a lot for you guys with representation. Just hook me up.
Fly me to Perth, then let me go to Adelaide, and after that, I'll go to Brisbane and Sydney, and we'll play all our away games, and the rest will be at the MCG.
No, my theory was I just thought that the club should just rent him a flat in Bendigo for the month and he could just drive down
travel.
Every time he needed to train or whatever, and that'd sort that out. Ash seems to think I'm being a bit too much like a lawyer.
You're being a lawyer with religion.
Where's the loophole in religion? I found it. Great. It's in Bendigo. It's a flat.
So their rules.
Yeah, it says right here, right. If you have to travel this far, you're exempt. It's fine. Yeah. I've checked. Don't worry, guys. I've checked.
Yeah.
Mate.
No, it literally does.
Does it really?
That's what I'm saying. It literally does, yeah. Yeah. The travelling exemption is like it's one of the most well-established. Yeah, like you have to make the days up later.
Oh, okay.
It's like one of the most well-understood. In fact, how's this for a callback? The Champions League final in Madrid was during Ramadan. So there were days I was in Madrid and I didn't fast because I was traveling. I made up the days later. See, we all have to tough it out in different ways.
Wow.
There you go.
Waleed, thank you so much.
Mate. I know we were only supposed to take up half an hour of your time.
We way overspoke. Sorry.
There's an hour 10. So thanks, mate. That was awesome. We had a great time.
Well, I stopped looking at the clock. So there you go.
Time for everyone's favorite Wendy segment, Hot or Not Hot.
Hot or not, the fabled Hot or Not Hot.
It comes at the end of Wendy or Thursday's episode because it's the best way to kick you into the weekend.
Yeah. You may have heard of a segment called Hot or Not.
Yeah.
Seen in the Herald Sun, the living room, lots of places. But yeah, no one's doing Hot or Not Hot.
I've even seen Hot and Cold. Suckers.
So basic.
Where did you see that? Amateurville?
Because here at the Adam and Simon Show, we do Hot or Not Hot.
Because we are professional level.
Yeah.
All right, Adam. Do you want to go first?
I'll start us off.
Okay.
Hot. Spring cleaning.
Yeah. Raging hot at the moment.
Raging hot. Mm. So I threw out so many clothes the other day.
Mm. Did you?
Yeah.
Where'd you throw them out? Heaps of them. Take them to the pool?
Not hot. Not having enough room in your bin to fit all your spring cleaning.
You should just chuck them in the bin. Why don't you throw them to the pool?
They're not taking donations at the moment, company policy.
Ah, that's a bummer.
Yeah, so not only all of the spring cleaning rubbish and garbage doesn't fit in the bin. Hot, right. Spring cleaning, not hot, not enough room to dispose of spring cleaning.
Interesting, and I see what you've done there. You've done your-
Joel, I've taken the Joel's advice.
No, you've linked them. I know how you like to link your hot or not hot.
Big linker.
Yeah,
big linker
that was Joel's advice. They should be related.
Yeah, what does he know?
I'm not sure Joel knows what's best for him.
You both clearly don't have related ones.
Mine's related.
All right, go for it, Joe.
Hot. When you finish a jigsaw puzzle, but afterwards when you get to put it back in the box and you just get to crumple it up. So much fun.
Is that more of a simple pleasure again? I don't know if everyone's doing that.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know if it's hot.
And you also get to just keep it on the table for a couple of days. We did it.
You could have.
I would say hot jigsaw. Finished jigsaw puzzles.
Or just jigsaw puzzles in general.
Not hot.
Jeez, we brushed over that quickly. The simple pleasure being a hot or not hot again.
No, it was a hot.
Again.
Hot. No, I ran it by Jolly this morning. I rang you. Not hot. The 3 days leading up to the last piece going into a puzzle where you're just like, I don't want to do this anymore. But only the most cowardly person just bails on a puzzle halfway through.
How far into your how many pieces in your most current puzzle?
We're running 1,000 pieces.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So we've
no, no one's doing like 500 piece puzzles.
How long do they take? How long does it take?
So the first one took us 4 days. Like not flat stick.
Yeah, no. You like just like cruise past, night, chuck a couple of bits in.
And then this last one would have taken a week and a half.
Whoa. But
we hit the wall because there was always trees in the middle.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just diabolical.
Yeah, and it's just looking at you for like 4 days. Every time you walk past, you're just like, oh, jeez, I can't do it.
God damn it.
But we knuckled down.
My friend actually has, for all those puzzle people out there, there is a puzzle roller that you can get. Because often people do it on like a puzzle thing.
Roller. Yeah.
So you basically put a mat over your puzzle.
Yeah.
Like a big like placemat.
Yeah.
Ah.
And then you... Like, and there's a PVC pipe or something? I don't get how that
just
works.
Roll it up.
But then it just rolls your whole puzzle and then it keeps it all in place and you...
And then you unroll it and they're all still together.
And then what do you do with it afterwards?
And then you can keep doing it. So you can both use your dining table when you're...
Oh, I thought you meant when it was finished and I was like, it's finished. Oh, why do you need to roll it up?
No, you'd be one of those sickos who frame it. You know, the people who do puzzles and frame it.
I reckon that's kind of sick.
Yeah. Big one. Big wall size.
All right,
one.
You got to get to your hot or not hot.
My hot this week, the internet.
Oh, Jesus.
Everyone,
get out.
Jesus Christ. We've got to end it here. That's enough. It's the Adam and Show. No. No one can hear you. Your mic is down.
No, get me up.
Your mic
get
is down.
Get me up. Get me up. That's a good one because that's hot. Everyone is pumping megabytes at the moment.
Oh.
Am I wrong?
Yes.
How?
So wrong.
Are you using the internet heaps? Streaming?
So you're saying, so because the controversy right now is that your Tuesday simple pleasure was the internet and now your hot is also the internet.
That's okay.
Are they the same thing?
No.
Is a simple pleasure a hot?
No, that's not what I mean because-
But you phrased them both the same. You said the internet.
Yeah, because that was for dramatic effect. Adam, I'm a performer.
Oh,
let me perform.
This is diabolical.
Because on Tuesday, on Wayne- I said the internet because the simple pleasure of moving into a new home and getting your essential services switched on, that's basically the simple pleasure. You're like, oh, sick. Now this works. That's great. But this today, Wendy, the hot is the internet. Like everyone's using it. The internet's big time at the moment.
You're lucky I'm really tired.
Kids are on the internet at school. People are watching, like doing their homework on the internet. People are streaming on the internet.
Next thing you say, people, like hot. Food. Everyone's eating it.
Wow. That brings me to my not hot.
Shout out
is Neil, it going to be not having the internet?
Shout out Neil Diamond because this is some serious Sweet Carolina Reaper right here.
No way.
Yes.
What's no your way. Not hot?
My not hot.
Oh, this will be good.
Social distancing. Too many people in the park.
Is it people flouting rules?
People flouting rules. Thank you for the clarification. That was good. Too many people in the park.
Like calling people out is not hot or people actually doing it?
Nah, people actually doing it. People like if you go to a park and it's full of people, go somewhere else. Don't just go to that park.
I hate people putting photos on Instagram and they're like, we're having drinks. And it's like
four
people in like, you know, they don't live together.
Yes.
Yes.
And it's like, you are breaking the rules, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's just really annoying because like, guys, I would like to just go back to living my life like a regular person. So let's all do the right thing and hurry up.
Yeah.
Like go inside. Don't go to the park and have drinks with your mates. Like go for a walk with your partner, go for a walk with your housemate. But if you go to a park and there's heaps of people there, go to a different park, somewhere else.
You've actually brought yourself back with that not hot because hot was,
let's not get carried.
I mean, you brought yourself back to a zero.
You know what?
Close to.
Not hot, your guys' attitude on my hot.
Well, let's get us a hot from KV, the socials queen, to get us really into the weekend. KV, what's our finish hot?
My hot is solo dance parties.
Ooh, I like that. What are you, talk me through this, KV.
All right, so because of CP, obviously we can't go out partying anymore. So we just bring it in the room, play our favourite music or headphones if you want to not disturb anyone else and just vibe out, just partying in your own way.
Do you know what would be a great music track to solo dance to, Simon?
This is a stitch up. Did you set this up, KV?
No.
I feel like that someone could do it'd be nice to solo dance to a DJ set.
There's been heaps of live stream DJ sets at the moment.
A lot.
Just one notable missing.
Do we want to talk about this?
No.
Yeah, we do. We want you to put out the set.
I've actually spent all week like curating a set. I've done a couple of ones and I'm not super happy with them. And if I just go live on Insta stories, the sound's going to be no good.
Do you know the one thing?
That's what I'm worried about.
Do you know the one thing that the Adam and Simon show isn't? It's not a podcast for excuses.
It's not, mate.
A podcast that follows through on promises.
Or, look, what we do on the Adam and Simon show, we talk about something, and if we talk about it, we either get it done or we ignore it until it goes away.
This is more libelous than your hot or not hot 5 minutes ago.
Hey, just a quick one for you, KV. When you're like playing your music for your solo dance parties, what do you use for your music?
What do you mean? Like what platform?
Speakers? Yeah, what platform?
No free ads.
Apple Music.
No free ads. Got it. Hey, does Apple Music just work, or do you need to use perhaps the internet for it?
Are we on air right now?
Yeah, we can finish here. All right, thanks. Happy Wendy, everyone. Happy Wendy
Big time hot, the internet.
Bye.
Big time hot, the internet.
So hot. So not hot.
Big time hot, the internet. You're welcome, everyone.
Happy Wendy, bye.